Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back to the House of Mystery. And of course, I'm Al Warren. Joining me today, we've got a Canadian writer. Look out. The newest book is called Wild Not Broken. It's the Hearthstone Book 2. And our guest is Sarah Caddis. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Al.
You're welcome. Sarah, how's it going?
Actually, it's going great. This morning I was hammering out another book. So yeah, it's going good. Thank you.
Well, hammering. So what happens to you? Does just something come to you unplanned? And that's kind of where you start the book process in your head?
Sometimes, yeah. Actually, sometimes like a flicker or flash of a scene will come to mind and I'll think, well, that's kind of cool. Like that would make a kind of a funky scene. And then I just sit with it. And then, that's actually the kernel of the idea for this whole series actually started. I used to do a lot of archaeology work, including helicopter surveys in pretty remote places up north. And if the helicopter doesn't pick you up, you have to stay overnight in the bush. And like, we carry some gear with us should that have to happen. But there was one time we were in a large crew and I was the second batch, you know, that was going to be taken out and it was getting pretty late and snow was coming in and I'm like, oh God, that would suck if I had to, if the last two of us had to stay out in the bush. And I actually met my husband on an archaeology dig. And so I thought, well, what if if somebody you stayed in the bush with, you actually liked and like, wouldn't mind, spending the night in the bush with, and that's how the stories just like, they avalanche from, you know, random stuff like that. So yeah. So when I say hammering out, like when a scene comes and you just kind of run with it. I love that. Being on that frequency. It's pretty fun. That's when you lose time, you know, you're just in the zone, which is awesome.
Well, so your characters, not only just the scene, but maybe your characters come to you that same way?
You know what? Yeah, actually they do. And I was actually just chatting with some other writer friends of mine. And this might sound weird to your listeners or completely normal. Sometimes writing for me feels like channeling. The characters are so vivid and they really do talk in my head. Like they're insistent and some of the secondary characters are sometimes so insistent and let me know that they're going to have their own story, you know, in the future and whatnot. So yeah, it feels like these characters feel so real that it sometimes it feels like I'm channeling instead of making stuff up in my head.
I've heard that before. A lot of fiction writers will say that, and I always sort of think that they're schizophrenic. But
I have wondered about that too. Like, if we were to explain, you know, I guess the symptoms that we're experiencing outside of something like creating literary art. Yeah, what would a doctor, psychologist, what would they assign, you know, oh, from those symptoms, you know, this is what you're experiencing. But in the context of literary art, we assign, oh, no, this is just my process.
They're not telling you to go out and do weird things, are they?
No, they're telling me actually share this with the world so that actually share this with the world so people get along. That's what. That's actually, I guess, a kind of underlying thread, even though they're thrillers. I write eco-thrillers, and that underlining thread, even though there's a lot of tension and a lot of really bad stuff that happens, there's just that currency of hope, or a current of hope, I should say, that runs through.
Well, that's interesting. Like. You know, I guess in a sense, that's kind of your subtext. That's kind of a...
totally. Yeah.
Something you hope people take away from the book is some sort of a thought or an idea like this. We're getting along, for instance. I just talked to a sci-fi writer that does that quite often, and it was very interesting to hear his points and how he did it subtly without people really spotting it so much. They just sort of get it from the story. But so you're doing the same thing sort of. So do you have that first or do you have the story first?
Actually, I'm what's called a pantser. So I sit down and see where the characters take me. I can usually pantser a book, a novel to like 50 or 60,000 words. So I guess it's just part of my writing voice is there has to be those layers of hope and connection and working together and cooperation. Like that's just part of who I am, that even though these characters talk to me and they take me on this wild ride and they kind of, they dictate what, you know, what I'm supposed to be writing about. The part that is me is that, that social responsibility within novels. And to lead us into, I guess, a more beautiful, gentle place. And harmony, which is really funny to have a thriller, you know, want to lead readers in that direction. But that's me. That's my writing voice. That's my jam.
Well, I would imagine that contrast makes it more real. Like it's like putting comedy into a horror in a sense, not that that's what you're doing, but the contrast helps you get through it.
You know, yeah, actually that totally makes sense. And when you, I also feel that it gives readers an emotional toehold, you know, like to navigate the story and climb the story with me, so to speak, and go through the twists and turns and have those emotional, but also visceral reactions to what's going on, and to care, right? Like, writing 101, how do you make your reader care? You know, well, they have to be emotionally invested in the characters, just like we should be emotionally invested when we're writing them. It's just, actually, I love writing. It's such a beautiful exercise of exploring the human condition in lots of different facets and like turning things around and seeing perspectives and motivations from different points of view and seeing how people make the decisions they make and like what motivates them and what are catalysts that we work to and what are our triggers. I write to understand the world around me too. So these characters, even though they're dictating the story to me, they really are helping me understand the world around me.
Well, do you have any answers for me?
Well, I guess the one thing I would say, they are eco-thrillers. The environment's super important to me, but so are people, right? And like functioning economies and our planet. So I guess I love to write the eco-thrillers that I write because they're not apocalyptic, right? Like I've been on a lot of panels where, you know, eco-fiction panels, and most of the other writers wrote like post-apocalyptic stuff. And I understand like that's their jam and that's cool. But I just know that I wouldn't even know where to start. Like I wouldn't know where to go in that direction. Like I have to have these characters take me someplace positive, right? Like that's just again how I'm wired.
You're in essence, you can have kind of the same story as someone like that, you know, apocalyptic, you know, post. But you're in your mind, people are going to make it through it. It's not going to be disaster. It's just a challenge that we get through and we'll get through.
Yeah, for me, I guess I'm doing environmental consulting for as many years as I have. I've worked with a lot of environmentalists and I've worked with a lot of oil companies, right? And so instead of seeing them as like these two, you know, fierce competitors, you know, at odds and trying to conquer the other, I'm like, dude, why can't we just look at this as, we do have a global energy crisis. Let's work together and put all of our best people on it. And all of our best people means putting all of the people within all the industries where energy is the industry, right? Like we have to listen and work together, listen to each other and work together instead of just fight. To me, I'm like, oh my God, don't waste my time. Solutions, people, solutions. So,
yeah.
Which I know that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but for me, yeah, I'm not interested in fighting. I'm interested in moving forward, and my characters are super pragmatic and they want to move forward too. And sometimes they stumble, but they also reserve the right to learn and grow and listen to another's perspective and change their mind and work together. So yeah, like I said, it helps me understand the world around me.
I guess you're like Greta Thunberg, you blah, 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 with all the people just talking, telling you it's like, blah, blah, blah. I want to hear results, not blah, yeah. blah, blah. I get that sort of. I do. I think it's funny, but I think that doesn't it seem like an uphill battle with the older generation so set in their ways?
That's a good question. And there, I would actually say, in my experience, there are as many of the older generation ready and willing to like roll up their sleeves and let's be willing to change as there are the younger generation not, right, you know, wanting to stick with the status quo. So in my experience, actually, it's been, it has been different. There's been, you know, lots of people of all generations willing to consider changes and alternatives and like, okay, well, how do we make this work? And there's also been younger folks going, I don't want to change. Like, this is how I, you know, this is what was promised to me. And I don't want to have to pivot from that. But I'll be honest, I'm kind of weird artist. So my circles might not be what other folks are. So I feel that we can learn so much too from older generations, right? Just like we can learn from youth. Man, what I learned from my daughter. Oh my goodness. Like, it's amazing. And when I volunteered in different classrooms over the, you know, over the years, like, gosh, I'm floored how much I learn from people younger than me, the hope they inspire within me, but also how much I learn from my elders and the people older than me who are willing to share their life lessons with me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the surprise in the younger is we were probably that way when we were that age, but what happens is we grow up, and when you see your younger daughter, for instance, doing and saying some of these things, you're blown away because it's like, wow, that it brings you back to being them, and then you take it from that point of view. I think this is really an important thing too. Like, you had a lot of years dealing with this whole climate situation and the earth and energy solutions and stuff you were saying. So I'm guessing that this is a very important part of your stories.
Yeah, it is. Where I currently live now is in Western Canada in a province called Alberta. In Alberta, it's There is, that's the best way to explain this to
American listeners.
It's the
Houston of America, we call it.
It is. Yes, that is actually a great way. Yes, it's the Houston of America. And I actually was born and raised in the States. In the American Midwest and have lived in a lot of places in Canada. And Eastern Canada doesn't understand Western Canada, much like I suspect that different parts of the U.S. don't necessarily, understand other parts of the U.S.
Yeah.
It is. And when I have friends in other parts of Canada and also outside of Canada who are like, why are you in such a conservative, conservative province and, hell-bent on keeping things the way things were and clinging to oil and this, that, and the other thing. And actually I might run in different circles, but like the circles I run in are like, okay, let's rock this hydrogen thing. And, how do we pivot? And, oh my God, the wind in Southern Alberta, it is so strong, which apparently is beautiful for, wind farms. Right. So like, and the sun, how many days that we get sunshine out here, the prairies get crazy cold, but man, we are blessed with sun. There are major conversations in this province that the rest of Canada and maybe even many parts of the world consider super conservative and stuck on oil. There are a lot of people in Alberta that just are moving forward, like, whatever, I don't care what the headlines say, I'm going to hit hydrogen, I'm going to do the wind farms, I'm going to do the solar energies, also minimizing just the amount of resources required, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's important for me to include, I guess, to share a part of Alberta, because my books are very, I'm going to say, land-based. Like, the land has had such a huge influence on me, impact on me. And living in Canada has had a huge impact on me that I want to share that with people. And I also want to share part of this province I've lived in for 16 years that people don't see the Alberta that I see and live every day. Do I get frustrated with stuff I hear on the news and different things that different folks in power decisions I make? Of course I do. But again, so I write books of how I want it to be, with brighter futures and transitioning and pivoting responsibly and reasonably and where everybody can pivot together, right? Instead of leaving people behind.
Yeah. Okay. So now you can tell us the truth, right? You actually get on social media and you get really mean to these people that do the things wrong. Under a different character. you're someone totally different, and you get on and it's like, and you talk to like, right, Premier Kenny, and it's like, no, you don't. You can't do that.
I have had people who have literally moved out of the province because they have sent letters to their representatives here and have not been, like, the response was so critical that they were like, oh my God, I can't live here anymore. So I've actually had friends who have moved out of the province for that. I can say that I actually have a social media rule that spread joy. Right? Stay on brand, stay on point, and spread joy. And if my brand is like a better tomorrow by making today cooler and, making good decisions today, then yeah, I have to be kind and gentle and not engage like that. Although that would be funny, like the alter ego of Sarah, Sarah snaps.
Some evil woman in a computer just going crazy on people. I could see it. Well, I agree, but I'm very on social media, I'm always posting joke things, funny things, cute animals, plus the show and stuff, because I don't get into any of that stuff on social media because I want people to look at it and laugh. I don't want them to look at it and go, oh yeah, or I don't want to kind of trigger some sort of a fight or argument about this character or that person or what this person did or said. There's so much of that going on right now.
Yeah.
It's just like, post something that's funny, or my dog, something that they did that's funny. Because if I get a few people laughing, it's better than,
you know what? Yeah, because that laughter matters, and that laughter has a ripple effect. I truly believe that smile that you generated, that laughter that you inspired, has a ripple effect. So the decisions that people will make in their day, I feel, will be positively impacted by you sharing that joy in the world.
I hope so. I really, really do want people to laugh. I don't want them to be upset. And there's so much, you can find that fighting on so many places now.
It's very easy to find that if you want it. It's super easy. It's harder to curate your list, your feed to solutions or like, a, yeah. And I guess I also want to say, like, I totally understand social warriors who really feel passionately about something and really want to help the world move into positive directions. Like, I do recognize that is good, that we have passionate people wanting the best possible world. I just know that my way of contributing to the best possible world is actually writing the books I write that will hopefully inspire people and to maybe consider another point of view or be kinder to their, you know, neighbor or their teacher that day or whatever, you know. Mm. Yeah, that's so my contribution is the type of books I read. And I'm also, I'll be honest, I'm a little bit older. So social media and I are like, oh man, like, oh, it just doesn't come as natural to me as a lot of my friends and a lot of my younger, friends or colleagues. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned how the land is important. So when you're writing a book, are you writing like, the scene, the setting, the place that you're writing about, is it a character too?
For me, it is. Cause for me, it's a very grounding character, right? For me, it is a character and it's wise and grounding. It is. And for me, when I write, and I don't want it to, like, pace is super important to me in my books, because like most people, my attention span has shrunk as the internet keeps providing faster things for us to, you know, check out and witness and consume and whatnot. So I've noticed my attention span has shrunk and my ability to read fiction books with slower paces is actually really hard for me now, way harder than it was, you know, when I was growing up or even 10 years ago. So my pacing, I really want to keep quick. So when I want to share the land with people and have people viscerally experience as they're, you know, wrapped up in the world of that I created within the story, I want them to experience it, but also like, but not slow the pace down. Right. So, yeah. So finding that sweet spot of like enough words that really anchor the reader in the landscape, but also still, you know, keeps the story moving forward at a brisk pace.
Yeah. Now, so I noticed, okay, now when you write this is a series, right? So that we're talking book two. So is it, I know you said you pantser. So before you attack a series like this, like when you were on book one, did you know this was going to be a series? Do you have it all kind of in your head somewhat?
That is such a great question. And the answer when I wrote book one, I didn't know it was going to be a series. But I started writing book one, and then I also started writing book two and book three and book four. Book four, I actually thought was going to be a short story. So this was, I started this series, I want to say like 8 or 10 years ago. Yeah. So, yeah. And I thought they were going to be like standalone books, but then I realized that no, these characters needed to be a cohesive family and a series. So I had the starts of four of the books. So even though I pantser, I had the starts. So I don't know the language to say I pantser the books, but then I had like this, I knew what I had to weave in to like link the four books.
Right. So yeah, you kind of know the ending. You kind of know where you're going to, but you have to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually it's funny because I'm so keen on letting the characters drive, the end of book, was it the end of book three? Yeah. Book three is coming out the end of June. When the end of book three happened, I actually burst into tears because I'm like, oh my God, what do I do now? Like, oh my God, it was so like, what am I going to do with book four now? Because the characters took me to a place I wasn't expecting them at the end of book three. And I also want each book to be satisfying as a standalone, right? Because sometimes you encounter a series and, you know, like not the first book, but like the fifth book or whatever. Yeah. So I want each individual book to be satisfying as a standalone. but also be super satisfying if you read them in order for those readers and fans who want to read them in order. Yeah, so it's there are some rewrites that need to happen. So, and I actually wrote book three called, which is Not an Easy Truce, that's releasing the end of June this year. I wrote book three before I wrote book two because the characters of book three were chatty. They were chatty, and the characters of book two are like, we're just going to be quiet for a bit. So I'm like, oh, okay. So this series, I've written each book, like parts of each book, in no sequential order, which is not the most efficient way to do things. And other writers who listen to this will be like, oh my God, woman, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. But again, my process is not linear, and I let the characters drive and trust that they'll take me someplace awesome.
You're really stressing out some of those other writers right now.
You know, yeah, I've given, I've actually like co-taught workshops with people who are meticulous plotters, and man, do I have awe, shock and awe at the meticulous plotters of the crowd, you know, like, oh my goodness. Cause I tried it, and it was, the worst, like 7 months of my life. So that's when I really tried to fit, you know, I tried to fit in the hole that wasn't me. And yeah,
well, they're biting their nails right now, just so
you know. I know, I don't mean to stress you guys out. I'm sorry, it's okay. Yeah.
it's funny. Now, okay, so your main character is Lillian Morgan, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how much of you goes into Lillian, like what part of you goes into Lillian?
You know what, that's a good question.
I do this for a living, so.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Well, maybe because she does stuff that I think would be neat, like
right.
Being a courier for MI6, that sounds super fun. Being a war correspondent sounds terrifying, super important job, but also super terrifying. I guess how she, like, the rewilding that she goes through, yeah, I guess that's how I resonate, because it feels, writing this series has kind of felt like a renaissance within me, because I've been writing, like my first novella was released in 2009, so like for years, this has, you know, I was dabbling with writing and it, and I just like really kicked it into high gear in the last few years. So yeah, I guess I love that she just kind of went for life. Well, she kind of had to, I guess. I guess the rewilding, and for me it's been a renaissance.
So what was it, what was that thing that happened to you that initiated having the courage to actually write and let other people see it and have it published? I mean,
oh, like back in 2009?
Yeah, whenever it happened for you, what is it? Can you pinpoint kind of what it was that made you, and I say this courage, or I say feel brave enough to publish, because when you publish something, there has to be a certain amount of courage, because it's not just letting your family or friends or coworkers see it. We're talking about you put it on there and everybody and their dog can pick up your book and then read it and say something about it.
Yeah, I still, every single time I submit a manuscript to my publisher, I physically feel like I'm going to be ill, because it's putting yourself out there. Even though this is what I want to do, it's still, yeah, I still get that. So
but that never goes away, just so you know. I've done 26 books and I still feel nauseous when I do it. So
you know what? Part of me is delighted, because that means that you still care, right? Like it still matters. And the other part of me is like, oh man, like in my old day jobs, like you get used to things and you know, right? Cause you just, that's funny. So I guess I can pinpoint it. I've always been a voracious reader, and writing was always something that other people did, you know, and I gobbled it up and I enjoyed it. And it wasn't until a published author friend of mine, my husband and I had, we used to move around a lot between, you know, archaeology digs and school and stuff.
Running from the law?
Not quite, no, never that. Running to the next tent village, maybe, but never the law.
Okay.
Although I did write a nonfiction book with an active duty homicide detective, but that's another story. I had I was chatting with a friend after we worked together at a bookstore of all places. And she a published author. She was talking about an anthology that she, you know, was part of, where all the authors, you know, look at the same picture, write a story about it, tickety boo. And I thought, oh, you know, that's cool. That's neat. Over the next month, a story started popping around in my head from the picture she described. I didn't even see the picture. She just described it. And then the next time we were chatting on the phone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Again, this was years ago, so like way before texting and direct messaging and stuff like that. Chatting on the phone with her again, and I happened to mention it, and she's like, oh, you should try writing it. And I'm like, but I'm not a writer. And she's like, how do you know? Have you ever tried? I'm like, no. So I tried writing a novella and submitted it to the anthology that she was part of, and it got accepted by a small press, Eastern US press. And that toehold, and I know I mentioned toeholds before. It's amazing what happens when you get the smallest toehold, how that can like let you reach something that you didn't even think you wanted, right? Or didn't even know was possible. And so that initial publishing of that first novella, that first manuscript that I wrote, made me realize how much I loved writing, that it was super fun. And then I wanted to learn more and like do more and keep going at it. So yeah, that was that moment. And like to this day, I'm so grateful for that friend. And she's like, Sarah, like you're the one that wrote it. but she introduced me. She gave me that opportunity. And that's one of the things I want to write into my books. And sometimes people are like, do coincidences really happen like that? I'm like, yes, you know, coincidences happen, or like those boosts up that you can give another person or other people give you, like those moments in your life where you're like, holy crap, my life changed right there. That moment was, you know, changed my life. Moment, what she did completely changed my life.
And now that you're a big star, you don't talk to her anymore, right? She's blocked.
Actually, I do. I always send her the Christmas email, like reaching out. Yeah.
No.
It's so funny. I can tell she's like, you know, rolling her eyes like, Sarah, quit thanking me. It's been years.
Yeah.
But it mattered to me. It matters. Yeah.
And it's good to stay in touch like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. But well, that's interesting. So it seems like your creations, your books are very important to you. And at the end of it, so when you send it into the publisher and you get over your morning sickness, and it gets accepted and it's going to be, you know, published and go through that and it comes out, what does each book bring to you? How does it change you, do you think?
Actually, each book adds to my confidence. And I remember I'm active in our local writing scene, and we have a major international conference, writing conference here. And I remember there was a woman who was sitting in the audience, and she looked over and she recognized me because she actually had heard me present, you know, and she's like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "What? Like, are you kidding? Like, you never stop learning. Like, that's why I love this medium. You never stop learning. And it's just something that you can keep getting better at, and you can keep exploring different nuances. And that, I love this medium for that. Because you can keep growing. And so each book that I write, adds to that, I guess my backstory and confidence to keep going and to take more artistic risks. And and you're right, each book does matter very deeply to me. And I share a lot about myself with the writing, and I try to really include a lot of heart and soul into it, because I want readers to have the best possible reading experience they can have. So yeah, I guess each book just adds to that, my backstory and the confidence to keep pushing boundaries and grow as a writer and grow as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's important to be real and share a lot of your own feelings, emotions, thoughts and stuff in your books. But in today's world now that we've got social media the way it is, and everybody mm-hmm. and their dog again can just message you or give you a review, and it's very simple to be have interaction with writers now. And yeah. I think so when you share things that are very personal, mm-hmm. Is it kind of hard to take criticism on let's say someone that writes something, let's say not the best about your book or about a story or something that you find is very important, but yet to them they thought, "Oh, this is terrible. This couldn't be real. I don't believe this character," or something. Does that sort of make you feel a little exposed or a little bit, does that sort of get to you? Or
yeah, I think the initial rawness that I feel when I release a book, you know, send the manuscript in knowing like, okay, the train has started.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that initial rawness helps me cope with the rest of it. And when I do hear negative feedback or a review that it didn't resonate, you know, with somebody like it was supposed to, a few things come to mind. One, they're not my target demographic. Like, if I were to read, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a genre. Like, if I don't gravitate towards YA books. I know they're huge. Right. I know that is a huge, huge market, huge genre. It's not my jam. And so having me, you know, comment on somebody's YA book, I'm like, that's not really fair, because I'm not your target demographic. So whether I loved it or hated it is actually irrelevant, right? So, because I'm not, the author didn't write the book for me. So when I have gotten negative feedback, I actually remind myself that the book wasn't meant for them, right? Like, you can't be all things to all people. And I've been so fortunate to have really beautiful, beautiful fans that have told me how much my books do mean to them and have made a positive, you know, impact in their lives. And
well hopefully like we get that changed for you. We'll get some real brutal people saying something.
Another person said, she's like, "Oh my God, I have street cred now." Like, when she got her first like one star review, she was like, "I now have street cred because I've got like," so for her, it was kind of a celebratory thing.
Well, too. In a way, because it brings reality. Because like when you have one person say, one star. This is the worst written book. Yeah. This guy couldn't pass high school. You know,
yeah.
He'd get a D in high school with this in English. And then the next person gives it a 5-star and say, oh my God, you know, I'm head over heels. This is great. Yeah. You start to realize that that's kind of reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people that love you, people that hate you, you know, it's just kind of there.
Yeah. And that's actually why I made a internal rule with myself that I wouldn't leave starred ratings unless it was at least 3 stars.
Yeah.
You know, because if I didn't like a book, I just have a, you know, I guess a personal, you know, choice that I wasn't going to leave anything, you know, below 3 stars. And to be honest, I usually only leave ratings if it's 4 or 5 stars, you know, like, and that I can positively contribute, you know, I enjoyed this book because,
yeah,
not I hated this book because to me, that's why would I actually spend the time to write that?
That's, you know, like, you know, yeah. that's, I remember my mother saying, don't say anything if you can't say it nice. And I thought, you know, that might be really old and I might be really old, but I think that the truth is, you know, you pick up a book or you look and I didn't care. And you just kind of throw it aside. And mm-hmm. just like if you watch a TV show, I don't go on Netflix and something's on and then I get on and start sending them a review of, I don't know, I guess I'm not really that. You like something, great. If not, just turn the channel.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. So I guess I do recognize that people want to be heard, and I suspect, though I am not a psychologist or a professional in that field, but I suspect when people do leave those things, it's because they're not feeling heard in other parts, you know, and so they're like, well, darn it, people are going to hear me here. And that's with the internet, for better or for worse, you know, that's each person's individual prerogative.
Yeah. I always find out who they are, hunt them down and have them terminated.
that's just how you roll.
I mean, it's case closed, done. They'll never write another review. That's it.
Done.
It's over.
That's done.
And then, then you take them and you put them as a really nasty character in your book and you have them die a terrible death. I'm just giving you ideas for
just ideas. Book. You know what? I have heard that from several other authors, how they love writing. One of the reasons they love writing is to include those sorts of things
in their book. I've had that. I've had some big writers. J.D. Horn is a big writer, New York Times bestseller, and he said that someone will cut him off in an aisle and be rude to him. He'll take that character and he'll make sure that they suffer in his book, right? And I'm thinking, this is fantastic. You know, in a way, it's therapeutic.
Sounds cathartic. Yeah. Sounds
cathartic. It's working it out. I think it might be a good thing. At first, I thought, oh, that's crazy. But over the years, I'm starting to think, well, maybe this is a good way of actually working out these emotions, this anger, without actually hurting anybody.
Like constructively cathartic, where it doesn't hurt or damage anyone. But exactly. You get it out of your system.
Then that's interesting. So where do your characters all come from? Like not the main ones, but all those side characters, the ones that are in and out and have smaller roles.
You know what? I love people and I love watching people and I love traveling and living. Actually, I've lived in 3 different countries. So being able to just witness people going about their day, you know, minding their own business or not minding their own business, you know, like to me, it's a really beautiful exercise to just observe people around me. And so secondary characters often are from observations around me. I will share that a lot of my secondary characters from While Not Broken and also Not an Easy Truce kind of spun out of my experience writing that nonfiction police memoir with the homicide detective. That was a really dark project for me to work on. And people are like, Sarah, you don't read true crime books. You don't watch gory movies. Like, what in the world were you thinking doing this project with him? But for me, I knew that he wanted somebody he called me a tempered soul, you know, to take his, what he wanted to communicate and message and share it. So, so that was a really challenging, worthwhile, but super dark project for me. And I learned a lot about actually law enforcement and emergency services and people having the worst day of their life. Actually, I was exposed to something, and we talked earlier about peeking behind the curtain before the show started. So I had a chance to look behind a curtain I'd never seen behind before. And so that experience actually was more traumatic for me than I had anticipated. And so writing, you know, the next two books in the series helped me process that. For
right.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. So
you're still hearing voices and
I'm still hearing voices. Yeah. And drinking. Yeah. Wine, beer, scotch.
Still working through it. Right. But it's yes. this process. It keeps going.
Yeah. I actually started studying Buddhism during it because I knew that I needed to refine my center. And which is really funny because the homicide detective that I was working with, he looked at like the look on his face when I'm like, you know, yeah. I'm too stressed out. And cause I'm like, as far as he's concerned, I'm like the most chilled out person in his sphere. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But
different
yeah.
world.
Different worlds. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too. And this book came out, you said in January of this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that a lot of the process was happening over the COVID and
yes.
COVID lockdown and stuff. And I'm just wondering, and I ask this of a lot of writers in different types of writing, that how do you think this influenced your writing? And do you think that that seeped into your writing somehow during the process?
Yes, it did. Actually, COVID makes, or post-COVID, post-pandemic makes an appearance in book three. And actually one of my beta readers, she commented on, oh, like, and like I mentioned, like I wrote book three before I wrote book two. So this was like a year ago that, you know, she did the beta read for me. And for her, it was, oh my God, like she wasn't expecting to have a post-pandemic reference in a book so soon. And for me, like, again, I write to help me understand the world around me. And so having, travel is super important to me. I love seeing new landscapes. I love watching the sun come up and set in different places and hearing different accents around me and tasting different food. And with COVID, with the pandemic, I didn't do that for 2 years. And it was, that part of it was very upsetting to, it was very upsetting to me because those are things I really, really value as a life experience, or, you know, I guess a way to live life. So it did seep in. And if these two books were darker than the first one. And I suspect it's again, like those pandemic blues when you're just like, oh my gosh, the world is sad right now. And I certainly felt it just like so many others did. So yeah, I would say, also the needing to write about people from other countries coming together, right? Like coming to North America and that sort of thing. Cause I was missing my friends in other countries so bad. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so when you sit down to write, do you sort of have to be in a certain mood? And I say this in the fact of, let's say there's nobody home, you know, the old man and the kid's gone for, let's say between 11 and 3 today. So can you just kind of plan it and go, okay, there's nobody here between 11 and 3. I'll sit down and I'll write. Or do you have to be turned into a certain mood in order to actually write?
You know what? What flipped before, I thought I had to be, you know, in a particular headspace to sit down and write. And then I got my first artist grant where I actually had to deliver, you know, in a finite amount of time. And I got that artist grant actually before my new publisher. Yeah. Sorry. I'm just trying to think timelines. So that, and I've spent the last 20 years as an environmental consultant. So for me, consulting work is very like, you have to turn it on when you're at work and that's just it. And there's no like, you know, am I feeling like being a consultant today? Like, that's just not how it flows in environmental consulting. Right. And so I actually had to turn on the consulting skill sets within me as I wrote Not an Easy Truce, because the grant was for that project, Yeah. So I had to go, well, I don't know if the muse is going to talk today, but I have to get my butt in the chair and listen, you know, so I'm available if the muse talks. And what I learned, at least within my process, is that every single time I have my butt in the chair, the muse talks. And sometimes I actually have to write a scene I wasn't anticipating writing that day, right? Like, it might not be sequential because the characters talk to me as they talk to me. And I do different things to like set the tone. I have my own studio. And so I have a space in the house. I'm really lucky to have my own space so that I can have the ambiance, what it needs to be, in order to like cultivate and nurture. I'm sitting down to write. It's time to write. And it's like those cues, right? Like you can, all those sleep manuals, like have a sleep, you know, ritual when you go to bed and you'll fall asleep easier, those sorts of things. Well, I made different writing rituals, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do to prepare myself to get into the headspace to write. And it's actually been super effective. So there is a lot of coffee involved. I will share.
Yeah, I was going to say, what triggers do you use? Like some people use music, some people use drugs. I mean, like what?
Yeah. Well, for me, caffeine, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I love caffeine. And I've actually had, I keep it tempered. I have like 2 cups of a French press, like normal French press, and 1 espresso a day. So I keep my coffees down to 3 a day, which, yay, that's high for others and low for still others. So coffee is part of my ritual. And even like making the French presses in the morning, like that's part of the ritual preparing for the day. When I'm actually in my studio, depending on the scene, and I'm a super intuitive writer. Well, actually I tend to be live life intuitively. So sometimes I'll light incense or put the diffuser on. If I'm like, oh man, I just need something to set this space. I have a particular light that I turn on for certain things and another light I turn on for other work, 'cause I still do some environmental consulting work. Right. So yeah, just setting, basically it's like setting the stage for writing. So far, knock on wood, it's been very effective.
Well, and so what is your research? What kind of research do you do to put together one of your books?
Well, I'm so grateful for the internet. I'll be honest, I don't know how authors did it before it, because I'll be writing and then, like, for instance, at the start of this book where Lillian's actually, you know, she's being tried for treason. It's the courtroom. And then I actually looked up, well, where do those sorts of courts, what does that courtroom look like in the UK? And it's in London. Where in London? Oh, it's the Old Bailey. Old Bailey, that sounds fascinating. What does that look like? So I do a lot of research on the fly, and the archaeology stuff I've done and the traditional knowledge studies and indigenous knowledge studies I've done, research was a major part of the environmental consulting work that I've done. So it's what has that background has really helped me with researching quickly and effectively, so that I can communicate it to readers, right? Like, 'cause I've never been to the Old Bailey courthouse in London or that courtroom, like, but the internet provides me photos. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's
obviously
pretty good.
Yeah. When you research, you want to make sure that you're at a legit website and like, these are for realsy pictures and this is actually how it is, you know? So there's of course, due diligence and checks and balances and stuff, but I will look up stuff as I go. When, Colt, Lillian's counterpart in here, he's a bull rider. I've never ridden a bull before. I've attended rodeos. I've never ridden a bull. I've sat behind the chutes before, but again, like I needed to know how to explain things. So YouTube, and I can't remember the fella's name, that I can't remember how many times I've watched his videos just to really get the nuances of it, because I want to get it right and to have it come across as authentically and accurately as possible for the readers, and to do service right to what I'm writing about. I did not contact MI6 to check with their couriers.
No, we know even better. You probably work for them. Come on.
Well, I did immigrate to Canada, right?
Well, there we go. See, we know what's going on here. You got exactly. This big plot. New, I think you call it New World Order, right? You know?
Yeah. Isn't that a band?
Well, it was, but you know, we're talking, we know what's going on here.
Secrets, yes. You know. The fiction writers are taking over the world.
Yeah, of course.
One gentle review at a time.
Yeah, it's all fake. Well, okay. So how do you like to interact with people, and what are, like, do you have social media? What do you like to share with readers, and also website?
I am, nobody believes this, but I'm actually an introvert. My husband laughs when I say that. My mother-in-law laughs when I say that, but I really am. So interacting with readers, to me, I always have to, like, psych myself up, because again, you're putting yourself out there and you really hope that your books resonated with somebody. And it's so cute because I've had so many positive, beautiful experiences with readers. And I'm like, why was I so nervous and worried? So I do a lot of, well, before COVID, I did a lot of in-person events, a lot of guest appearances and stuff like that. Through COVID, I've done a lot of Zoom appearances and like presented on stuff and that sort of thing. I have a newsletter that I love. I love seeing when people open and, like, yeah, respond and interact that way. Website, yep. Social media, I'll be honest, I talk more on social media during the warmer months. And I know that might sound weird, but I have a natural tendency to, like, hibernate when the fall and winter, and then, like, be more outgoing in spring and summer, and then, like, super internal in fall and winter. So I wish I could, like, be that author who's, like, sporadic on social media and that be okay. You know, the rules of social media are like, you must be consistent and have great content always and post every day. And I'm like, oh, dude, that's not me. And the reader will know, like, they'll know that I'm just, like, grasping for cool content. So I try to go for quality and not quantity for social media. So for your viewers who are awesome at social media, I am in awe at you and I applaud you, and I will aspire to be better at my social media presence.
So what is your website then?
It is sarahcadesgraham.com. I used to keep my fiction and nonfiction separate, but I just want to write. So yeah, I was spending more time attending to websites and whatnot. So yeah, I just amalgamated everything. So it's sarahcadesgraham.com.
Well, that's not too hard. We'll have that up on our website and people can find you with one click in case they can't find it for themselves. And I'll tell you, certainly been interesting. And you guys actually have summer months in Calgary?
You know, we do. We do. Although, it's been weird. It was like minus 20 this morning when I woke up, and I'm like, seriously, it's like March. Come on, guys. Come on. Come on, Mama Earth. It's March. Yes, it is crazy, the weather here. But summer is coming. Summer is coming, as our beverages on the back deck.
Yeah, it's summer coming. Comes. It's like it's June and all of a sudden it's September and you're getting the white stuff again.
Not yet. Not ready for it yet.
never ready for it. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a great conversation. And the book we were talking about is Wild, Not Broken. And our guest has been the author, Sarah Cades. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, Ella. I had a blast.
Get the latest news and opinions from Eric Shapiro from the House of Mystery website in the Shapiro Report.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.